This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. Got family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. Scott Payne is the owner of this business. He's in Elkton, Virginia. He also has a lure line, Mountain Rebel Lures and Baits. He's got a great coyote trapping video. He's also a fur buyer in Virginia. Anything that you're looking for and your trapping needs, give Scott a call and he'll get it right out to you. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're an ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it. Fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light. Sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dig. Shotgun toter, Republican voter, Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA, cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I
Well, this is Clint Locklear, and I am in the basically frozen tundra of Tennessee, which is very odd for trapping season down here. It's been a wild winter. I feel for y'all guys up in the Northeast and the Midwest. I mean, good grief. Y'all are going to start speaking Swedish or something before this is over with. way your weather's at. I mean, it is wow. Or be saying about way too much because you're that close to Canada thinking you've just been overrun by them. I mean, our weather has been terrible for trapping. I think it's going to help our fur prices, but it's been pretty rough on the individual trapper because of that. Now, I'm getting close to be going to Texas. And the show I'm going to be running tonight may be a two-part. Heck, it may be a three-part. I don't know. And I'm gonna say why here in a minute, because I think it's highly important for several reasons. And if you're new to trapping and you're only thinking about what's the best trap and stuff like that, you may not get what we're going to be going over tonight, really. But later on down the line, because this is going to be archived, I bet you'll be coming back to it, because you're going to find out something I'm going to say tonight, if you stay with me, that is probably going to scare the bejesus out of you when you hear it. And then you're going to blow it off. And then somewhere down the line, you're going to see it coming true. And then you're going to come back to this radio show and at least get my point of view on it anyway. Not saying that I'm right. Now, before we get into tonight's stuff, keep in mind, I'm not an accountant. I'm not giving accounting or legal advice in any shape, form, or fashion. I'm giving an opinion on a subject that I happen to know about because I live it every day. But I'm not giving any type of legal or accounting advice on this. So when we get into the business aspect of some of this stuff, y'all really need to get a CPA, not one of these show up for 3 months out of the year things where they just, you go in and they really don't know who you are or what you're doing. You really need to spend the money and get a good accountant if you're going to be doing anything that I'm going to be talking about tonight. And you need to find one that has the heart of a teacher and not one that has the heart of take your money and get out of my office. Because there's so many new rules and regulations and stuff coming on, there's no way for an individual to keep up with it. But I'm getting ready to go to Texas, and when I'm down there, my internet sometimes is non-existent for a month. So I'm going to try, when I go to town, I can post a few pictures on my Facebook page. I can maybe turn on a few things while I'm down there, get my web guy. I'm going to try to get a couple radio shows ahead from the middle of March or late middle of March. I mean, middle of February to March. What the radio show schedule is going to be, I have no earthly idea. This happens every year. It's just life. It's just the way it is. We'll get kicking in high gear when I get back again. It may seem like it goes dead. There's nothing I can do about it. That's just part of the reality of being a mom and pop trapping business that still traps, and there's really nothing I can do about it. So you're going to have to just accept it, I reckon. Now, what we're going to talk about tonight is business. Why do you, and I'm talking to you, not the guy next to you, not the guy that you're going to be seeing at the convention, I'm talking to you. So go ahead and say, Clint's talking to me. Get your brain in this way of functioning. Because I'm getting ready to give you a scenario that's going to start happening to trappers, and it's going to blindside you, and it's going to have consequences that you're not going to like. I'm going to be talking on why every trapper that makes any amount of money, and I'm talking if it's over probably $1,000 a year in fur, you need to start a trapping business. And you need to talk to your CPA, whether it needs to be incorporated or sole proprietor or however you need to set that up. Because I guarantee you there's probably 500 different ways to do it. And there's 500 of you out there that needs to do it a different way. But why am I going to spend a week or two on this subject? For me personally, I've got a great life from trapping. And I meet trappers all the time at conventions. I talk to you on the phone, on Facebook, on Wolfer Nation, on the comments, emails, everything. To me, the guys that trap and girls that trap, that's really all I care about besides my family. I don't understand the rest of society. You know, they're, ooh, you catch animals. Ew, that's gross. Oh, Miley Cyrus is shaking her butt on TV. Let's go to YouTube and watch it. I just don't understand that about society. So I don't try to understand them anymore. I just go about my business. But if I can help some of y'all because that's really the only, it's, you know, that's the tribe I'm in is trappers. So if I can help the tribe out some way, that's what I want to do. And I see guys, and I know what's going to be coming down the pike to trappers, and I'm sending out a warning call to a lot of guys, and I'm also sending out a help call that you can make and keep a lot more money that you make from trapping if you quit thinking about it like a hobby. Now, I could go into a tangent right now of why the National Trapper Association and the Fur Takers is screwing up Eight Ways from Sunday because they look at trapping from a hobby point of view. I'm not going to do that today. I may do that somewhere down the road. Trapping needs to be an industry based on businesses. It's harder to make it go away. That's all I'm going to say on that subject right now. It's easy to make a hobby go away. But why do you individually need a trapping business? And I'm going to give you a scenario. And I'm going to start with an off-the-wall scenario. And then I'm going to go into a very direct trapping scenario. And then I'm going to talk about something called normalcy bias. And you need to think about all three of these as I'm going through. Because normalcy bias is going to be kicking in on the first one and the second one. And every decision that you make that has any relevance whatsoever, you need to always take and consider what normalcy bias is and if that's affecting your decision. Because most of the time it does, and it's fantasy. So I'm going to give you an off-the-wall topic right now of why you need to be a business. Right now, our government is broke and getting broker. And if you don't know how the government runs, let me explain something to you. But before I get to that, guys, keep in mind, I am a business owner. I've never heard anybody say this before, but the only way I know how to describe myself politically is a feral libertarian. You know, if you've ever been around a feral cat, he doesn't want you to pet it. He doesn't want you to feed him. He doesn't want anything from you. He just wants to be left alone. That's it. Feral. They don't need domestication. Libertarian is just everybody, as long as you're not breaking someone's leg or picking someone's pocket, you leave everybody the heck alone and everybody leaves everybody else the heck alone. That's kind of basically what a libertarian is. You know, libertarians, there's a t-shirt that I want to get. It says, libertarians have a plan to take over the world and leave you alone. And that's what a real libertarian is. They just want to be left alone. And they don't want other people in their business and they don't want to be in anybody else's business. So when you're hearing some of the stuff I'm going to be saying tonight, keep in mind, that's who I am, and that's where my mindset, and that's the reason I think the way I do. Now, if you still believe in the Republicrats and all that, you may have a hard time with some of this. If you still think that the federal government or state government or county government has your best interest in mind, you're going to have a hard time with this. And I want to start with one to try to chip away at the normalcy bias most people have. Everybody's seen the Progressive auto insurance commercial, Flo. And she's trying to get people to put this little chip in their car to get lower insurance rates. There's several states now, especially out west, that are trying to do this through regulation. And what this does, it is a GPS that you plug into your car that the insurance company has data on everything that you do. Now, what they're trying to do with that is make sure if you tell them you're only going to drive your car 20,000 miles and you drive it for 50,000 miles, all of a sudden your bill's going to go up because that little thing's in your car because there's no way to hide it. They're going to make this in this country, it's going to become normal. Maybe 5 years, maybe 10 years, I don't know. It's going to become normal. You're going to have a GPS on your car. One of the main reasons for this is, and I guarantee you this is not coming from an insurance company, it's coming from the federal government, is now they pushed a lot of these cars to be getting 30 and 40 miles per gallon in electric cars. They're not getting the gas money they want. And the only function of the federal government is to take your money. That's all bureaucrats are good at. And they need your money because they're broke. And that's going to play into our second scenario. So you're going to have this little chip you stick in your car. Somewhere down the road, because all governments right now are broke, county, city, and state, and the federal government's broke, they're going to see this little chip in your car. Now, they're going to go, for safety reasons, we need to have access to this information. And they're going to be able to tax you more. They're above what other people do because they're going to set a limit. A good American's only supposed to drive X miles a year. Now, if you're a trapper, excuse me, you're going to blow that out of the water. So you're going to pay more taxes than the guy that lives next to you that goes plays golf. Promise you that's coming. They need the money, and they're going to get the money. It's no different than putting all the cameras up at the intersections everybody's seen where you just automatically get a ticket in the mail. It's revenue generation. That's all it is. So now you're going to have cities and counties and states are going to be knowing that this is in your car, and all of a sudden they're going to go, you know, we need to have access to that information because we need to have safer streets. Save the children, all that other garbage they always speak. Now, when you go 60 miles an hour and 55, you're just going to get a ticket in the mail. They need your money. They're going to get your money. And that's coming down the road. You can see it right now on the insurance commercial. There's states right now legislating that. When governments need money, they're going to take money. And that is why you need to have a business in trapping. Because if you're doing this as a hobby, all after tax money is being spent on it, you're showing it when they do find it, and they will find it, that it's all net income. Guys, net income is nasty. It is dirty, and it is destructive. Net income means they just get to take a humongous swipe out of everything. Just like they're going to get out of your car when they figure out how much trappers drive. Or anything else you do where you drive a lot. That's coming down the road, and you're going to see it. One of these days, you're going to go, holy cow, that hillbilly from Appalachian American could see this coming. How is that possible? Guys, the information's all around you. Normalcy bias in America, they would never do that to us. Yeah, and they would never record your cell phones in every place you go on your computer and store it for later date. So if you ever get convicted or go to trial, if you don't think that information is going to come out, you're fooling yourself. They would never do that either. So now we're going to get into why this is important to trappers. You're going to get a letter in the mail. If not this year, next year, and if not next year, I'd be surprised if it's 3 years. You're going to get a letter in the mail from the IRS saying the income that you have does not match up with our records. We need to audit you. And you're going to go, well, my boss takes out my taxes. And you're not going to be really worried about it because, you know, if you're an employee, taxes are pretty simple. And you're going to show up and you're going to be blindsided by this little guy from the IRS that is getting a bonus for stealing your money. We'll get into that more in a minute. So you're going to walk into an IRS agent as a trapper, has a job probably, or a business, and he's going to go, these numbers don't match up, and you're going to hand him your boss's number, and he's going to look at it, and then he's going to flip this other sheet of paper out and goes, where's this income? This is why trappers need businesses. That other piece of income is going to be coming from a fur buyer, or the North American Fur Auction, or the fur harvesters, or wherever else you think that you can hide that fur at and get paid for cash. Guys, it's coming. North America has already shot the warning shot over your bow. If you send fur to North America and you get a little letter that you may not have paid attention to that states that as of right now, we do not have to give this information to the federal government, but they're asking. So what does that mean to you as a trapper? You may think, well, I don't catch enough fur to make a difference. Let's say you make $1,000 or $5,000. And all of a sudden, you get audited. The IRS is going to go back 3 years. Where's the income for your fur for 3 years? Now they're going to get in your bank statements. How did you cash the check? Now you're going to have, instead of $1,000, it'll be $3,000. Instead of $15,000, it'll be instead of $5,000, it'll be $15,000. And instead, if you're really doing, you know, kicking butt on your trap line, you may over 3 years have $60,000, $80,000, $150,000 you've made on fur, which is very possible to do today. But you didn't pay any taxes on it. You're not a business. It is net income because through your ignorance, you did not start a trapping business with your trapping, because your trapping business is a profit-driven enterprise regardless of how you think about it. In the letter of the law, when you go out and you harvest an animal and you sell that animal or parts of that animal and you get paid for that animal, that is income. Now, if you're feeling a little easy right now, you should be. Because, guys, this is coming. You can mark this date. It's like the 6th of February when I'm doing this. It's going online on the 7th. 2014, you're going to get these letters in the mail. Now, the little peckerhead that's going to be sitting across from you wearing a suit from the IRS is getting a bonus for getting money out of you. If you don't believe me, turn on the news today or tomorrow. Google it. Right now, Congress is holding an open forum meeting with the IRS, because the IRS, it's either $67 million or $670 million that they're paying their high producers. Now, what is a high producer in the IRS? What do they produce? They produce yours and my money. That's what they produce. So they're building a culture in the IRS to take as much money as they can so they individually get more money. It would be like a bounty system for beaver. If you're in that area, you're going to take advantage of that bounty system, because if a beaver's worth 20 and you get $20 bounty, that now means that beaver's worth 40. The same mindset's going on in that little peckerhead in the blue suit across from you with an IRS badge on his lapel. So they are gearing up the IRS right now because the government is broke. You got to understand that. The government is broke. The government is beyond broke because it's probably about $120 trillion in stuff they've already promised that they don't have that. They ain't that much money in the world. I mean, it's beyond broke. I mean, if you generate $1,000 a year net income, dude, you're more profitable than the federal government. That's how broke they are. It's all a show and it's all marketing. So you've got an IRS that is being paid bonuses to get money. The IRS has already sent money to North America, and I'm sure fur harvesters. And if you think, well, that's a Canadian company, they don't have to do what the IRS says. All fur coming from the lower 48 goes through Wisconsin. If it goes through Wisconsin, that is in the continental U.S., which falls under jurisdiction of the IRS. So, yes, they will. And do you really think NAFTA or fur harvesters is not going to take the fur that they make their money on from people from the lower 48 for the simple fact of doing the right thing? Really? So you're going to get this letter in the mail. All of a sudden, it's going to show that your numbers don't match up. They're going to go back 3 years. If you can't prove to them what they do, the little peckerhead's going to guesstimate. It's going to be way higher than what you actually make, because the more he makes that, the more money he personally makes as a bonus. So now, congratulations, because you don't have a trapping business and you haven't taken the time to quit watching Miley Cyrus and take care of your own finances, now you're basically a slave to the federal government. Because the only thing the IRS does, you got to look at the IRS for what they are. They are human farmers. They sell human production. When China buys treasuries and stuff that goes into our budget for the United States, what is China buying? They're buying your future production. Just like a farmer gets a loan for a cow that he can sell the future production off that cow, whether it be meat, baby cows, or milk. It is no different. And when you start getting outside of the normalcy bias, the way people look at the federal government, understand that they are human farmers and they sell your production, you've got to protect that production. If you don't protect it, dude, it's your own fault. and that's coming down the road. And here's where it even gets worse. Once they find out that you did something wrong in the 3 years, they're going to go back 5 years. And if you haven't kept any records or put it in your bank account or a business account where it's just income like anything else, they're going to go back and they're going to give you penalties and interest on that. So say $50,000 that you come up with over 5 years of trapping plus interest and all that stuff is going to be $150,000, $200,000, $300,000. If you're making $60,000 a year, how are you going to pay that off? Well, you have a house, don't you? You have a car. You have stuff they can sell. Happens every day. Now we're going to get into the normalcy bias of this if we get into the business part. But you need to understand why this is so important. This is why I think this is an important subject for trappers. Because guys, it's coming. And when the IRS figures out there's hundreds of thousands of guys that sell fur and don't report it, they're going to go after it with a vengeance. Because not only is it the income they didn't get, it's all the penalties and interest that they hadn't had to do anything for but sit type a piece of paper. And they're going to come after it. And if you're doing some other type of income-producing hobby, it's going to be the same way. Because they're getting desperate. That's why they're giving them bonuses. They're trying to turn them on. They need more production from you to keep the federal government at the level that it is and where they want to take it. That's just the world we live in. You can like it, hate it, ignore it. You can put your head in the sand. It makes no difference, guys. That's the world you live in right now. People see you as a farm animal, and they're going to get their production out of you, especially if you make it easy for them. And someone that does trapping as a hobby has got a target on their chest that is bright orange saying, please come bend me over the table for the next 20 years of my life so I can just give you all of my production. And that's exactly what's happening. Now, normalcy bias is something where you don't think that insurance companies are going to give that information to your state to write you tickets because the GPS says you went 60 instead of 55. Because that wouldn't happen in America. By God, we wouldn't allow that. Yeah, we will. It's also normalcy bias when you don't think the federal government is going to find some way to charge you more gas tax, even if you're running an electric car, because they need, quote, money for the roads, or for the children, or for the puppy dogs, or whatever they come up with. Normalcy bias says they can't do it, because you don't believe it can happen. Normalcy bias is where people get really confused about their money. Most people don't understand deflation of their money. Most people don't believe in America that in 1970, if you made $20,000 a year, you now got to make over $100,000 to have the same lifestyle. Normalcy bias tells you that that can't be possible because I've got more zeros on my paycheck. Normalcy bias is saying that just because I trapped 2,000, I'm not a target for the IRS. For desperate people, that's a large amount of money when you times it by, say, 100,000 trappers, plus all the interest and everything else. Normalcy bias is a bitch because it's unforgiving. And what that normally means is you just think it can't happen to you. Who got up this morning thinking they're going to die in a car wreck? Nobody. Well, they wouldn't have gotten a car. So when you're making decisions and you hear information I hope with all this stuff, when I talk about thinking out of the box, you start thinking for yourself. You start asking different questions and you start seeing the world in a different way. It's just the way it is. Can you change it? I don't know. But there's games that you can play for your benefit. Now we're going to get into some of the business stuff that if you're an employee, you're going to think is very unfair for a business owner to be able to do. You're going to think that net profit, when you start, really makes a difference, and it doesn't. Gross. I'm sorry, I've been saying net. I meant gross. Gross is the max amount. So if you have a business that generates $100,000 and you only profit $20,000, the net is a 20, gross is 100. So I've been not a professional talker here. So I meant gross. Gross is dangerous, especially for somebody that's not keeping records because they're not looking at it as a business. But you've got to protect yourself. You've got to start thinking outside of normalcy bias when it comes to your personal decisions. Now, I want to go over three different kinds of businesses. And we're going to kind of go into all three of these. And the reason I'm doing this show or shows on this is I can tell you that I'm going to be coming out with a training course for guys that really want to get in depth in this stuff, probably over the summer, that you've got a place to go to learn this from somebody that actually lives it. Not a school teacher that don't have a business, not a professor that never owned a business, someone that deals with it with life experience on a day-to-day basis. Now, you may be thinking, well, you're going to charge for that. You're dang skippy, I'm going to charge for that. I'm giving away all the information I've done on this for free. I hope you pay attention to it. I also hope if you don't want to pay me, you figure it out on your own through doing a lot of self-education the way Benjamin Franklin did it. He taught himself the same way I've done it. But you've got to know some of this information or you're going to be sitting in front of that IRS agent. Somewhere down the road, most trappers are going to find themselves there. Even most trappers that listen to this radio show, because normalcy bias is going to say, that don't matter to me because that's not really going to happen. Okay, what's the three kinds of businesses? You've got one, which most trappers, I believe, are going to go about what I'm talking about tonight to be business number one. And that's helping you out on your taxes. It's a way for you to use the system for your advantage instead of getting ran over by it. Because if you're trapping and you have a job and you're not running this as a business and keeping up with any of the taxes or paperwork or anything, it's running you over. And it's going to be very clear in a minute how that works. A dollar to a business owner is very different to a dollar to an employee. Very different. They have different values. What they can buy is very different. Also, the tax advantages are extremely different. And we're going to get into that. You've also got ways, if you're doing it, to help on your taxes. If you've got an inventory of traps, personally, and you start a business, that's considered a business loan into that business. And we're going to go into that a little bit because that is a huge, huge thing as far as helping you out on your taxes if you have a job. And all this, what I'm talking about, at least right now, is legal. There's nothing under the table or in the dark about it. It's just the way the rules are. It also is a way where you can recoup some of the taxes that you're paying and your employer's paying for you on if you're used to getting a refund from the government. So if you're used to getting back $3,000 or $4,000, you may be able to get back $8,000 or $10,000 if you've got that much in there to begin with, to start with. This is not how to cheat the tax system. This is just the way the tax system is. The rules are set up for everybody. The neat little niche for this, guys, for trappers, it's set up where you can act like IBM and not be IBM. And you can take advantage of that. So that's the first type of business. It's just to help you out on your taxes. The second kind is you own your job. And most people in trapping, that's kind of where everybody's at. You own your job. You're there every day doing what you need to do. It's more technical. You're basically the employee, even if you have an employee. It's not like you can close the doors with somebody else and walk off and it runs itself. I mean, if in that situation I'm at right now, if I don't make lures don't get made. I'm changing to the third business because now I'm not bottling the lures. I've got a guy that bottles the lure and it allows me to multiply the money generating time in a day. Now the third type of business is profit driven and it's a business. Now when you look at some of the bigger distributors we have, some of those or that type of business. Tim Caven could leave for a month and Minnesota Trap Line would still work. F&T probably could leave and they've got enough systems in place, enough employees and enough stops and stuff and good employees. They could probably walk away and do that. That's a totally different level of business that most people never get to. But you need to know what type of business that you're getting into when you start this. If you just start a business, guys, and you just say, I want to make more money, I promise you, you're not going to be successful because that doesn't mean anything. You know, that's probably something we'll get into on the course a lot. You've got to know what you're getting into when you start it. And that's the reason about 80% of businesses fail, which to me is silly. Making money is not that hard. As long as you know what you're trying to do and you're technical enough to do what you're trying to do and you understand business enough to be able to do it, making money is not that hard. It's everywhere to someone that looks at business from that point of view. So those are the three type of businesses. Now, before we get into why some of the advantages of having these types of businesses, what they are, I want you to keep one thing in mind, whether you're doing just a trapping business, where it's just you going out and catching fur, or you're buying fur, or you're selling supplies, or you're making DVDs, or you're going to start a radio podcast, or whatever it is you want to do. There's some things that you really, really need to understand. Value and money are two different things. The value of a business owner's dollar has a lot more value than an employee's dollar. It buys more stuff. Right or wrong, you need to understand that. And we're gonna have a running tally coming up here in a minute on why that is. So if I spend $1,000, it costs you $1,200 to get the same thing. And I'm not talking wholesale. If you're thinking wholesale, what I've just said, scrap that out of your mind. We're talking dollar-to-dollar value. Let's say we both need a product. We can't get it wholesale regardless if we had a business. From a business point of view, I can spend, in reality, about $800. It costs you $1,200. And I'm going to show that very clearly here in a minute. So value and money are two different things. If you're looking for freedom to spend with your family or more time trapping or different things like that, that's value. It's not necessarily money. You've got to separate those two when you're making decisions because they are drastically different. One is just numbers. Numbers don't mean anything. They really don't. Value of that is, if you're in a job you hate, and you want to start a business and go trapping because that's what you want to do, even if you didn't make as much money and it gave you more value in life, that's a better deal. It's always a better deal. So the value in that is different. If you're going to be in business, guys, and this, our industry is the worst I've ever seen, maybe short of the deer industry, is don't be a copycat. If you see somebody at a convention and you look at them and go, I can do that and make that money, I promise you, you're not going to be very successful. If you see someone make a DVD, well, I can do one that good. Don't do it. Make one better or don't do it. If you see how someone runs their trap line and you just want to copy that, you're not going to be very successful. You can't be a copycat in business and be very good at anything. Now, I'm not talking about just helping you on your taxes business. This can be anything in life. You can't be a copycat. Copycats are always first losers. Always. They never get the recognition. They never get the branding. They never get all the stuff that really matters in business because they're a copycat and everybody knows they're a copycat. So don't go down that route. Now, before we get into why I'm hoping that I got your interest piqued on why my dollar has more value than your dollar, I want to give two examples of business. So when you're looking at your business, I want you to think about these two examples from now on. And they're not trapping related. They are farming related, which is really close to trapping, but they're not this way. And Chip, if you're listening, dude, I'm not picking on you because we've talked about this, but the way people look at business from a common way is so destructive. It's destructive to them. It's destructive to everything they lay their hands on most of the time in a business like this. And that's the reason 80% of businesses fail. Running a successful business is not that hard, especially in the trapping industry. It's a very small fish pond. It's not difficult. It's a niche market. It's all niche. It's not like you're trying to compete with Procter & Gamble on getting a soap in Walmart. You're not having to do that. So it's really easy in this industry and a lot of other industries to be successful if you just use your head and you're not a copycat and you understand value. So I'm going to give you a couple examples on why using your head in business is so important before we even get into the technical stuff about it, because this is where I think most people fall flat on their face. We're going to use a cattle farmer for an example on the first one. A cattle farmer historically does one or two things. He goes out and he buys cattle, or he has cattle and he lets them breed and he raises those cattle and eventually gets a surplus so he can sell. Okay, the standard way a cattle farmer goes is exactly what they're taught in their ag schools and by their extension agents. And they're basically taught to be a servant farmer to the state. And this is the reason why. All of the potential profit by doing it the standard way that cattle farmers go about their business takes almost all their money away, but leaves them with all the risk. And it's not a very good deal. So a standard farmer that gets an ag degree from University X, and he goes out and he buys property or he inherits property and he goes and buys cattle and he puts a fence on there and say he can put so many cows per acre on this piece of property, and then he goes and he does it. Well, now he's got to go out because of the way that most people do their farms and they just let the cows run crazy. They've got to supplemental feed all the time. His cost goes up. And let me say something before I keep going with this example. There's only two things a business can control. Only two. And this is the reason most people fail when it comes to business. You can control your expenses, and you can control what you charge. Everything else is left open to the market. So you have a cattle farmer. Because the ag guy says you have 100 acres and you put X amount of cattle on there, you're going to fence it in and you're going to go about that and you're going to let them do their natural thing every day and run around. Well, when you do the way that you're taught, you're not using paddocks. Paddocks are just basically smaller fields and you move them all the time. All the time. So the manure and the ground does not get compacted. You've got more grass, you've got more hay, you've got better quality stuff, and you've got your own feed. So you're not having to buy as much feed. And then the traditional cattle farmer is going to go out and he's going to send off his cow to a grain producer or feedlot somewhere in Kansas or New Mexico or wherever it is, and they're going to dump all kind of grain into this cow, which is going to be a lot of money, which means the profit that the cattle farmer is getting away from, because he's already lost money because he does traditional field maintenance, and he's already lost money because he sent it off to get grain fed. So his profit gets lower and lower and lower. And then he sells it on an exchange where he gets paid by the pound that's not set by him. He never sees his customers. He doesn't know who they are. It's somebody on a phone, and he sells it kind of like a lot of guys do their fur. And at the end of the year, he may have had to take out a loan for $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000, and he may make $50,000, $70,000 off of those cows when you really break down the numbers. Because what he sold them for makes no difference. What he gets to keep at the end is the only thing that matters. He can sell those cows for $1 million. If he's got $900,000 of expenses, he only made $100,000. $1 million is irrelevant. Now you've got people that raise their cows different. They move them all the time. They come in with chickens behind those cows, and they actually let the chickens graze through there, so they're, all the weed and stuff's gone. So that farmer's no longer having to put pesticides and herbicides on his hay fields because he's letting chickens do it. Now that same person is also selling the chicken meat. He's getting eggs. He's selling the eggs. He's got better grass. Everything's working out just the way it's supposed to. And then he's going to turn out. So that farmer has stacked something there. He's got two things on the same field. He's got better ground. He's got better grass. He's got more money because the cattle farmer's not selling chickens and selling eggs. And he's spending more money on his pesticides and herbicides. And he's going to go buy more, which is an expense, which drops what he makes at the end of the year. The more modern cattle farmer now does not send his cows to the exchange. He does not send them to grain feedlots. He does not have that expense. He doesn't sell them for $3 a pound like every other cattle farmer does. He sells them for $8 a pound. Well, let that sink in for a minute. One farmer has less inputs, so he has less expenses. He's got a real or perceived higher value product because there's a huge market for grass-fed beef that is sold for 2.5 times normally higher than standard beef. So you got one farmer that's now selling two products, or three if you count the meat of the chicken. Or it's just family things, you don't sell them. Just take that out of the way. So you've got that. He's got higher priced product, and he's got less expenses in it. And do you know that that type of farmer is not 1% of the cattle farmers out there? That is lunacy. That is lunacy for cattle farmers to do what they're doing. Here in Dunlap, Tennessee, up on Signal Mountain, there's a guy, and they're all over the place. There's several outside of Chattanooga. I've talked to several of them in Georgia. He went from traditional farmer, where they never had any real money. You know, they would have cash flow because of loans. Never really had any money, because I've talked to him about it. I was just dumbfounded at the difference. Now he owned the same piece of property. He moves his cows around. He's got chickens coming behind him to fertilize for him and get rid of all the weeds. And then he rotates the cattle back through. He takes them to a slaughterhouse. He pays the slaughtering fee. And he turns around and he sells that for way more than a standard cattle farmer does. And if you're not there within 30 minutes of him opening his freezer, you don't get any meat. He's the only one up there doing it. There's guys around here doing that with pork. They're doing it with chickens. They're doing it with everything. They're making way more money than the traditional farmer. Now, why did I go through all this? Or I'm getting to go through permaculture here in a second. Because the common way that people think about business is the reason they suck at business. If I was given a sales pitch to a traditional cattle farmer, and I said, you're going to buy this ground and you're going to fence it, and then you're going to do these practices so your ground's always going to be compacted and it's not going to grow very well. And if you want to grow your own hay, you're not going to be able to do it here because of what you're doing. So you're going to have to go buy this other piece of property so you can cut the hay or buy the hay. And then at the end of this term, because you want to have this certain quality of fat in the meat or whatever, even though the market that's paying more is begging for meat, you're going to send it off to Kansas or Texas or New Mexico, wherever it is you're sending it to the grain farm. That's going to probably take half of your profit away. And then we're going to sell it on an exchange where you make 2.5 less than the guy that's just letting them eat grass and selling them straight out to the people that are knocking his door down to get more beef. How would you even sell that sales pitch to a traditional farmer? But that's what over 99% of them do. The little guy that I buy some of my meat from, he can't grow enough cows because the demand is so high for that right now. And the price of, because of all the inputs that a traditional farmer's got to put into that, his cost is getting so high that it's driving up regular traditional cattle stuff to where his profits are even less than the price of regular beef's going up. Makes no sense. If you think of your business like that cattle farmer, you're going to be thinking about it in a lot different way, and you're going to be way more successful. Now, I'm going to talk, and I'm going to give you one more example, because I want to drive home the point of, if you're going to take the business plunge, unless it's just for tax purposes, you don't need to believe what your professors and, you know, forgive me, but even your parents have told you. Because most people are so focused on what the herd is doing that they never think for themselves. Because I guarantee you, I could introduce that cattle farmer that's making 10 times the money on the acreage to a traditional cattle farmer, and he'll come up with every reason why he can't do it. And then he'll struggle for money and taxes and everything else his whole life. And the example sitting there right in front of them, most people, when they see opportunity, run away from it as fast as they can because it's different. You know, it's a phobia all animals have, including us. Now I'm going to talk about permaculture. If you don't know what permaculture is, it was started in the 70s by a guy named Bill Mollison. He kind of started the thing. It's been taken over by hippies a lot, and here lately the hippies have been losing the battle and it's going back towards normal people. But permaculture is a way of agriculture. Now, I've talked to several farmers, and I'm going to use some numbers here that are really pretty much right on. If you're a row crop farmer, you're probably going to have a loan every year of $500,000 that's due at the end of that year. So you're going to go out, and with that money, you're going to have $250,000 tractors and $250,000 combines and 18-wheelers and silos and buildings and all this, and you're going to have to lease all this land or buy all of this high-dollar ground to farm. And then you're going to be running $3 diesel in it. You're going to be running all kind of fertilizer. You're going to be running all kind of herbicides and pesticides. And because the county executive says, you know, if we don't get the water off of your field, it could be muddy and you may miss a harvest. So we're going to flatten it, drain it, tile it, do everything. We want the water off of there as good as we can. But now since we've done that, it don't hold water anymore. We need to put in irrigation. So now you're going to have to drill wells and run pumps and maintenance and everything like that. And then you're going to buy seed because the exchanges only want a certain type of seed that costs way more because there's only two companies that make it and it's patented. And then you're going to go out there with all the risk and you're going to put corn and soybeans in that every Tom, Dick, and Harry farmer from coast to coast is putting in. So there's always a glut on the market most years, unless there's crop failures or droughts or something like that. And we're going to put you on an exchange where we're going to basically tell you what you make. And every few years, we're going to give you a high bushel cost so you think you're doing something, so you'll forget about the 5 years before that you only made $30,000, $40,000. And when I talk to farmers, you know, salt of the earth people that are doing what they're told and think they're doing what is right, they go out to a piece of property and they start this process. And basically their whole life, they work themselves to death, taking all the risk. They spend all that money and inputs to make an average salary of probably $50,000 to $60,000. Now, farmer doesn't want to tell you that he's risking $500,000, half a million, to make 50 or 60. Even if he was making 100, and most of them don't. When you're going to talk reality, not the perception that non-farmers have, but when you really get to talking with them, it's pretty bleak. So they're working all that time with all that risk and all that money and all those inputs for very little return. That's how most people run their businesses. Now, I want you to run your business like you knew what permaculture was, and I suggest everybody out there spend a little time on YouTube, get past the hippie nonsense, and figure out what it is. Now, permaculture, it's a set of systems. You grow stuff the way nature grows it. Most permaculture systems, I'm going to tell you how different it is between traditional business farming or traditional business trapping. Keep those two in mind because they're very same. It's the same. A permaculturist will look at a piece of property where a row cropper's got to probably, if he's going to make any amount of money whatsoever, he's going to need 500 to 1,000 acres. So he's going to buy that land. Or he's going to rent that land. A permaculturist, if he finds 40 acres, he'll probably never have more than six acres of it in production. Not true production. There's some permaculture farms that are bigger. But when you get into zone fours, and you have to do your own research, know what that is. It's not really production in the way we think of production in this country anyway. So you got a permaculturist, doesn't have to buy 1,000 acres or lease 1,000 acres. He can buy 40 acres. Now this is where the examples get really close to trapping. You, the trapper, can buy 40 acres or 5 acres or 2 acres. But you're probably not going to be able to buy 1,000 acres because right now good farmland in Iowa, I've heard, is going for $4,000 an acre. That's if it's not really tiled and it's not very well developed for what they're trying to do. That's $400,000 you got to get back just to start. And now you're going to go get a loan for a $250,000 combine and a $250,000 tractor and probably another $300,000 in all kind of vehicles. So you're at $1.5 million. Now you're going to have to go buy very expensive patented corn or soybeans and all the fertilizer, all the diesel, run the pumps, run the water, pray that it doesn't rain too much or it rains enough that the water bills and all that stuff doesn't absolutely kill you. And at the end of all this, of all this worrying, all this risk, you're going to make $56,000. Now, a permaculturist, right now, you can go online and see several examples of people that make way more than a traditional farmer on an acre of ground. Let me say that again. There are all kind of people all over this country and all the way down to the in Philippines, in South America, Australia, in Europe, that make more than a traditional farmer makes on an acre or 2 acres of ground. Most permacultures, if they're motivated enough, if they try to put 40 acres of production in place, they can't harvest it all and they lose about 3/4 of their harvest. Because it's so abundant, they can't even get it to market because there's so much there. Now, a permaculturist is going to look at this and go, well, you know, I can buy a house because I got to have a house, and I can probably get an acre or two of ground for, I don't know about up north because y'all's prices are insane up there, but in Tennessee, you can buy that easily for $150,000. That's with a house. Taxes on that will be about $600 a year. I can turn that into $50, $60, $70, $80, $100,000 of income. Now, the difference between the permaculturist and the traditional farmer or the traditional trapper and the permaculturist trapper is one of them doesn't own a $250,000 tractor. He doesn't own a combine. He hadn't had to pay for all that ground. He doesn't have to pay literally tens of thousands of dollars for fertilizer. He doesn't have to dig wells to irrigate. He doesn't rely on a single crop to make his money. So if something goes wrong with corn, it doesn't affect the permaculturist. He just keeps rolling on. Where the corn farmer is screwed. Or if the corn market goes down, he's screwed. Permaculturist won't even be a bump in the road. Now you may be thinking, how is this possible? How can someone on acre ground do more than a farmer? They don't think like a traditional farmer. A trapper that thinks like a traditional trapper is doing the same thing, I guarantee you, most of the time. Especially trapping businesses. Because I know all y'all that are in business. And I'm just like going, holy cow. It's crazy to me. Because I see business the way a permaculture sees business. Now the realistic part of a permaculture business is where most traditional farmers have a hang up, is it takes them about 4 years to get in full production. But then it's almost all profit. And if you can run a 2 acre permaculture farm, probably with only 6 months of your time. Now think about this for trappers, because winter, you probably want to be trapping. And probably in 5 or 6 hours a day. And you're making more than that traditional farmer. Now how does permaculture work like this? Well, a permaculturist understands their system in place and he wants to stack stuff. Stacking means, if you've got a barn wall, you can grow kiwi on it, and then on the other side you can have muscadines on it, and this, that, and the other. Traditional farmer will to put that much, if you got a decent sized barn, he'll have to dedicate a half acre ground for that. Well, it only really took the permaculturist, because he's stacking functions of that building, because he's got a bare wall there, he can put up wire on the side of that building, grow those products, muscadines, grapes, or whatever it is, kiwi, hops, makes no difference. On the side of that building, he only took up 2 feet plus the linear footage of that building, where a traditional farmer takes up to do that much, probably half acre ground. He's also got a cooler builder in the summer, and when the leaves die back, he gets a warmer building in the winter when it's cold. That's stacking functions. That's the way you need to look at your business, guys, if you're going to have a trapping business. Even if it's just for tax purpose, how can you stack this stuff to be more productive? Just don't go put a half acre of muscadines in. Run it vertical. That way you're not taking up any space, but you still get all the positive of the production. Now, permaculture is going to go in there, and unlike a traditional guy, he's not going to flatten his land. He's probably going to put swales if he needs them in his land, so it holds water. And that goes against everything a traditional farmer likes. They don't want it to hold water. And then they got to turn around and spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to get water on it. I mean, that's crazy. There's no reason for any farm in Iowa to need a well. None. They would lose some acreage to swales, and they wouldn't be able to use tractors the way they do. But look at all the money they would save, because that's what you can control in business, is an expense. So you're sitting there, and a permaculture is going to put swales in to hold the water. And now he's going to put a variant of crops in there. Most of the time, it's called food forest. You can look that up on YouTube if you don't understand what that is. You can put a food forest in. I've got an acre of ground right now. I just bought another acre next to me with a house, because that's going to be my lure shop. We'll be closing here in a few days. Now I've got 2 acres of ground. On my property, guys, I want you to think about this. I've got several peach trees, several apple trees. I've got several pear trees, cherry trees, plum trees. I grow muscadines. I grow blackberries, blueberries, raspberries, pomegranates, figs. I grow all the traditional annual vegetables. I have not taken up 1/10 of my acre to do that. I like growing stuff in the summer. It's peaceful to me. So that's kind of my hobby. That's not counting all the tuberous stuff like Drew's Lamb Artichokes. And I'm not going to go into all of that type stuff. But you're talking on a little bitty section of an acre. Look how much production. Me and Cindy eat fruit, and my food forest is not even close to being mature. We eat fruit all the time. We got a freezer full of it. I can sell that if I want to. That's the difference. And I run my business that same way. I think of it in terms of permaculture. If you follow the principles of permaculture, you'll have a kick-butt business, regardless of what it's in. Traditional normally means it's stagnant. It's on the verge of dying from the moment it's in conception. Permaculture is not that way. It's always expanding and it's growing. Now, this is, if you're a traditional farmer, you're probably going to get mad at this. If I wanted to, and I didn't have the lure business going the way that it's going right now, I could literally, on my 2 acres of ground, make $60,000 or $70,000 a year in the next 2 or 3 years from then on with hardly any inputs, any cost, once I get the trees and stuff like that in there and the plants in there, for the rest of my life. Now, what's a traditional farmer do that's so different from that? And it's the same as in most businesses. You put all this money in the ground, and then you tear it all up, and you get to start over every year. All the inputs are every year. And you're not stacking any features because you're destroying it every single time you take that tractor out there. So when you're thinking about business, whether it's going to be in trapping or it's going to be in anything else, really think about, are you doing it in a traditional fashion that's stagnant to start with and probably not very profitable? I hear it all the time at conventions. They see a guy sell a dozen T-bar steaks. Well, I can make a dozen T-bar steaks. I'm going to start making those and bring them to a convention. I can make it for a dollar and I can sell it for a dollar. It's a dollar I didn't have. Yeah. And there's 50 guys there with T-bar steaks. Big deal. So you sell 50 dozen of them at a convention. You didn't even pay for the convention. So what did you really do? Nothing. But that's the way a lot of trapping businesses are ran, just like that. The same with their trapping business. I just got off the phone the other day with a guy, and I'm not going to mention the steak because I don't want to embarrass him. And if he's listening, dude, you need to... I couldn't believe what I heard. He's trapping coyotes in a state he's at. Hard. All the inputs to go into that animal. Coyote's not a cheap animal to catch on any type of scale. And somewhere this year, it registered to him, I make more money on the muskrats that have less inputs. And it's hard for him to get out of, I'm a coyote trapper or a muskrat trapper. If you're looking at it as a business point of view, there is no comparison. If you've got muskrats, especially what they're bringing now, $12, $14, even in our fur crash everybody keeps talking about, or you get $30 for a coyote and you got a decent number of rats, you don't have to catch 10,000 of them. You're going to make way more profit. But most guys aren't going to do that. They want to beat their chest about the coyotes. Businesses, you can't live in that ego frame of Facebook. You can't do that. But when you're thinking about, see, if he goes to muskrats and just traps a few coyotes just because he wants to, now he's thinking kind of more like a permaculture. And a permaculturist, guys, would now take that muskrat meat and go, hey, Clint, you use muskrat meat? I'd go, yep. I think I bought a ton and a half last year of tainted muskrat, ground muskrat meat. The permaculturist trapper is going to go, hey, if I wait a little bit later in the year, what are the muskrat guys bringing? Oh, they're about, you can probably get somewhere probably between two, three, if someone's depressing of $400 a gallon. I don't know if I can catch a gallon of them. But if I catch 600 rats, that's going to be so many 5-gallon bucket pails. I'm selling the muskrats for $14. Now, what's that muskrat really worth? What's that trapping season really worth? That's the difference between a permaculture trapper and a traditionalist trapper. Now, I may, if 10 guys call me, I can only handle so much muskrat meat. But I guarantee there's other people out there that want it. Sell it retail. If you can't find somebody to buy it. You build a brand up on having really good stuff, you'll sell it. Now that muskrat is worth a whole lot more money. Just like the traditional and the permaculture farmer. And that's the way you got to start thinking about business if you're going to do anything with this. I can't believe I run this much time out. Hell, this may be a three up. But I'm passionate about this. I can tell you that. I'm very passionate about trappers understanding business because I don't want you sitting in front of the IRS agent. I really don't, guys. Because that's going to be a bad day. And it's coming. And I don't want you to think about your trapping in traditional forms because it's not very profitable. That's why you hear most people, even guys that's been in this thing forever, you really can't make money trapping. Well, the same farmer that's been farming the same way, the way that he's been taught to do, ain't really making no money. He keeps doing it over and over again, and he go, well, I ain't really making that much money. And he's probably going to go, well, no, you can't make as much money on 2 acres of ground. The crap if I can't. Back when I was getting my trapping business done, I ran an organic truck farm out of my yard in the summer. I needed money because my business wasn't up to the point it needed to be. I was selling tomatoes for $2.50 a pound. That was 10 years ago, organic, heirloom, non-chemical tomatoes. And yes, you can do it without chemicals. Now, to a guy that thinks that you've got to do a traditional tomato farm, I could grow a tenth amount of tomatoes and make more money. That's the way business ought to be for everybody. Okay, I'm going to leave the permaculture thing alone a while. This is, I'm amazed what time we have in the show already. But just to reiterate the stacking principles. Now, a traditional trapper or a traditional business person has something, they sell something. And that's pretty much it. A traditional trapper will go catch a bobcat. He'll sell that bobcat for $200 or $100 or whatever it is, and that's pretty much over. Now, how someone that looks at stacking principles like in permaculture in their business, and I've never said anything like this in the open before, but I want you to understand the grasp. If you think outside of the box to the point where you quit worrying about what you're supposed to do by traditional standards, things start to change. What happens when I catch a bobcat? This is stacking. This is how this works. So let's say I'm in Texas. We're holding a school for Texas. We're charging money for it. We don't get to keep near as much of that as most people think, but there is income coming from the school. Because we're in Texas, where there's a lot of guys that want to catch a big showy bobcat. So we got income from the school. We have guys that are paying us to be at the school, and then they are catching a cat. Most people down there aren't going to keep the gland out of that cat, so I get to keep the gland. After that's gone, me and Norm and Albert's probably trapping, and then I catch a bobcat. Now this is the way my business works. Okay, I catch a bobcat with a trap. I've got access to the property. I catch the cat. Now, what's the cat worth to my business? Well, we can sell the bobcat for $100 or $200, whatever it's worth. I've got the glands out of it. I take the back straps out of it. And then that'll save either me and Norm on the cost of a meal or when the students are there, the cost of the meal. Then, if it was like when I was shooting my cat collector video, now I've got that same cat on video that I am now selling on video. I'm going to take pictures of that cat. I can use that picture, either blow it up at a convention for advertising or on Facebook or on Wolfer Nation or Trapping Radio, or on a brochure to someone that I'm trying to get another job or convention or whatever else like that. Now, How else can I use that cat? Well, I've got a story about that bobcat that I caught. So I can either write a blog post about it, or I can write an article for a trapping magazine where that'll generate some more money, or I can talk about it on Trapping Radio, where the sponsors are helping me with the server costs and everything like that. So that again has value beyond the point. So when you think about what that means to me in my business, I catch a cat that I sell the fur. I keep the glands that I make lure. I'm getting paid to be down there by the ranch, sometimes by the students. We eat part of the cat. I take pictures of the cat. I've got many ways that I can use that in my business. I take video of the cat that I can sell in a DVD, or I can upload to YouTube and try to reach more customers and different things like that. And I can go on and on. That's one cat, guys. That's one cat. I mean, stacking the value of that cat in my business, what is that cat really worth? Oh, yeah, plus the bounty we get on the bobcats while we're down there. I mean, what is that really worth? I mean, I can be using it to test new lures. I can be using it to test new flags, which I can write about and put in videos or books. Or I mean, it goes on and on. And that's one animal. Traditional guy gets it, sells it. I milk it for everything it's worth. That's stacking. Just like in permaculture. If you look at someone that's got a food forest and they plant an apple tree, for example. Well, underneath that apple tree, they're going to have something called comfrey a lot of times. And it's something, I'm not going to get into all that, but it's not something you harvest to eat. But it keeps you from having to add inputs because it brings minerals 20, 30 feet out of the ground up to the plant so you can chop and drop it. And then also under that same tree, I'm going to have herbs that I eat and cook with and dry that me and Cindy use. I'm going to have a blueberry bush. I'm going to have beans because it's going to put nitrogen in the soil and we're going to eat the beans. And this goes on and on and on. Now see, because the permaculture guy thinks in series of stacking and different results like that, in his business, if apples just fall out of flavor with people and he's trying to sell apples, that's okay. Now he's got basil, he's got beans, he's got blueberries. He can step over the new tree. That's a pear tree. And he can go on down the list all the way to you get to the vegetable garden. Just like on the same amount of ground with less inputs than a traditional farmer would or a traditional trapper would. And that's where you need to go in your own way of thinking about business. And I know for a lot of guys that seems really hard and out of the box just because you've never done it. And it's going to take some time to start thinking that way. I understand that, but anybody can do that. And if you kind of start looking at permaculture and you start thinking of your business in those same principles as permaculture, once you get all the hippie stuff out of the way, I'm telling you, stuff will go places you never dreamed that it would go. Now, I was going to get into why my dollar is worth more than your dollar if you're an employee and I'm a businessman, but because of time, I'm not going to be able to. But I am going to finish up on most of you out there that are going to be listening to this show that's been trapping for any amount of time. You've got a way in 1, 2, or 3 years to get a free lottery winning of $5, $10, $15, $20, $25,000. Tax-free if you're running your trapping as a business. Like I said, this is not shady. It's not under the table. It's just the way business, the way the rules are, guys. It's just the way it is. Say 15 years ago, you started trapping. And every year you buy 5-6 dozen cow traps and a couple of dog-proof traps and some 330s for beaver, and some snare cable, and you've got a canoe, and you got a trolling motor, and you got 2 batteries, and you've got all the odds and ends as far as gauntlets and waders and trap baskets and stakes and stakeolizers and tie-offs, and you can, if you go out and look at your garage and you inventoried everything out there, what would it cost you to replace that? I mean, I'm just going to do some quick numbers real quick. I'm doing this with a calculator, so these aren't pre-written. So we're going to say over, say you end up with 144 coyote traps. That's 12 dozen. That's time, say, $200 a dozen. That's $2,400. Okay, you've got 75. Let me make this even number. See, 12 times 6. You've got 60 conibears at $189 a dozen. So that's 5 times 12. No, that's not right. It'd be 5 times, say, 189. I think that's what Duke Magnums are. That's 945. You got 10 dozen dog-proof traps at $1.39 a piece. I mean, a dozen. $1,390. You got a canoe that you got 700 in. You got, say you've got 1.5 dukes for running your coon line, so you've got, say, 12 dozen of them. And if you don't have this many traps, if you were to look at someone that traps for a long time, this inventory I'm giving you is pretty small. Okay, so you've got 12 times 110, 1320. You got miscellaneous stakes and gauntlets and gadgets and welders and all that stuff. So we're going to say you add all that up. What it would cost you to go out and buy that today? And we're going to say that's another $5,000 altogether. And that may seem like a lot, but if you've never inventoried your stuff, you're going to be shocked about how much you've got into all this. So with these numbers right here, I just said, which is not like having thousands and thousands of traps, is that's $11,000, and that's, and I guarantee if you went out and did your inventory and you've been doing this a while, that's nothing. Because we didn't talk about 110s, 220s, 175s, all just the way trappers are, where they seem to collect and hoard stuff. So that's $11,000. If you start a business, you do an inventory of your stuff, and you need to make sure that you don't, you know, don't blow stuff out of the water on what it is. But if you've got a dozen 330 Duke Magnums, I think they're running 189. Just put 189 times how many dozen you got. You go out there with a sheet of paper and you run all of those down that list. Because what most trappers are going to find, if you've been doing this for a decade or more, this number's probably going to be closer to $25,000 or $30,000 of stuff you've got. Unless you're, you know, if you're like most trappers where you buy stuff every year, it just accumulates and you don't realize it. So if we got $20,000, and say you're making $60,000 this year at a job, you put that into your business. Now, somewhere down the road, anytime that you need it, and you know, go back to what I was talking about need and want when it comes to fur market, but once you put that inventory in your business, it's not like you're putting $20 that you got to go to the out of your savings and put into that business. That's in the business. But let's say your business, for whatever, really, or your job slows down, or you got to have another job, or you've got to do something like that. In your normal business, if you keep money in there and you're making money, anytime that you need that $20,000, according to the IRS, and I've been in business now for, I think, Predator Control Group, I think it's been 14 or 15 years, and my original inventory I've left in the business this whole time. So if I decide that I want to go buy a new truck or whatever, I can take that inventory back out completely tax-free, which is a huge deal. because we're going to get into taxes a little bit more on the next show. But you can take that loan, which you've done it over time, just like you were to put a loan to a neighbor or something like that. So if you need money, like say, for an example, which is very common, say you and your wife decide you need to get a new house, you can then take that money out of your bank account with no tax consequences whatsoever. And then you can transfer that to another account or get it in cash or whatever you're going to do. And you can go put that on a house. Now think of the advantage. Just that little bitty thing right there, that one little bitty thing right there, the advantage that gives a trapper that just had the forethought to think about doing it, of starting his own business. Because the money in your inventory is sitting out there and it's not doing you anything right now at all. Now it gets even better when you get on the tax side, because all that inventory you get to depreciate off anyway once it goes into the business. And that depreciation, depending on what your needs are when you talk to a CPA and what you need to do with that and what your goals are in your business, which is too vast to get into on a podcast, but whatever that is, not only do you get that $20,000 back, you can depreciate that $20,000 through that business over time where it comes off of your income. So what is that really worth in real money? That $20,000 to a business owner is really worth somewhere between $30,000 and $35,000 probably. And you've got that, there's a chance sitting right now that you're not taking advantage of, because you're thinking of it traditionally and you're thinking of it like a hobby. Now, if someone were to come in your house and steal $30,000, you'd be pretty upset, I'm sure. Or if someone came up and just handed you $30,000, I'm pretty sure you'd be excited about it. You've got that's in your ability, probably over the next 4 or 5 years, to give yourself a tax-free loan that you don't have to pay back of $30,000. It's not difficult. But unfortunately, people are just not explained how to do that. And your accountant, when you tell him what I said, he's going to go, yeah, if you're putting that in there, you know, you can take that money right back out whenever you see fit. You may decide every year I want to take $4,000 out of that and go on a family vacation. Or you want to take $4,000 out and do this, or take $2,000 out this year, or leave it in there for a rainy day fund. But you know, one thing about doing this, you got to have the money in there to take out. So you need to plan for this. But that $20,000 tax free is huge. Most trappers don't even take advantage of this. A lot of trappers, I've been in some trapping places that if they did inventory, I mean, especially some of the big time coon trappers and some of the guys out west that have 400 and 500 coyote traps, you know, from back in the 70s and 80s, to replace that today, that means they're sitting on the equivalent of probably $40,000, $50,000, sometimes $70,000 that they're not taking advantage of. They're paying taxes on when they bought them, and they're letting them sit there. But as an individual, this is not open to you. It's crazy, the advantages of being a business. This property we're getting ready to buy next door, or we're closing on this property next door. I'm buying this property. I'm going to turn around and I'm going to lease that to Predator Control Group Incorporated, which is an S Corp. I'm going to turn around and lease that back to me. So I'm going to write a check from Predator Control Group to me, and then I'm going to send the mortgage payment in on that property. I get full use of the property because it's mine, and all this is a paper shuffle. Now, when it's all said and done, I bought that property, guys, before tax. And I'm not going to say what it was, and it ain't near this much, but to keep the number simple, say it's $100,000. It ain't nowhere near that, but say it's $100,000. If you go out without a business and don't do what I just said that I'm going to do, which is what every business does anyway, that $100,000 is going to cost somebody without a business sent. It's going to cost you $128,000. So that means you've got to earn another $28,000, but you don't get anything for it. $28,000. That's just the difference of being able to play the accounting game because you own a business. Now, we're going to go backwards, and I'm going to finish up with this. That $100,000... minus 28%. Because I'm getting to pay for this tax before tax money. In reality, a value, and not numbers, but value of that, minus 28. That ain't right. That means I'm only paying $72,000 for this $100,000 property. The split between those two, between business and non-business, is $56,000. Let me say that one more time. The split between the two, because mine is before taxes, and yours is after taxes, it's $56,000. Now let's break that down even further. Let's get a little more creative, shall we? So I'm going to say my mortgage on that is $400 a month. I can lease that to Predator Control Group. I can generate through paper for my income of $300 a month, which is pretty good for rental, times 12, that's $3,600 a year. But I get another advantage for being a business owner over being an employee. That $3,600, I do not have to pay the self-employment taxes that I do if I just write myself a check for the $3,600. So really, the split keeps getting further and further apart. And you wonder why, if you don't have a business, you're always struggling. Have you ever wondered why that is? You work hard, because the game is not in your favor. It's just not. Because for me, letting the business buy that asset that I now own, that's $612 I get to put in my pocket instead of sending to the federal government. Just on the rental of that. I'm still putting the $3,600 in there, but you can't think linear with these numbers, because in reality, what that rental is going to mean to me is $4,212 a year. And it's all just playing numbers because you have a business. But that's real value. The $56,000 in split plus the $4,212. You're crazy not to. Now, you may be thinking, well, this doesn't apply to me. I just might catch $1,000 worth of coon. On loaning yourself that money, if you're right now, say you have a job and say you're making $40,000 a year. That's $40,000. You're paying 28% tax, and that means you're in the South and not the North. It means you're paying $11,000 and $200 in tax. Say you get back $3,500 of that. Means the government's keeping, you've produced that $11,000, you just don't get any advantages of it. It's in somewhere out there giving money wherever they're giving it. But you don't get any value for that $11,000. You produced it, you worked for it, you sweated for it, you gave up your time for it, but you don't get it. Now, if you loaned your, if you put that money in the business, and say you had $11,000 in there, and you need money or you want money for something, well, you could take out $5,000 of whatever the money is that you put in there, and instead of having $3,500 come back from the government, you can have $8,500 coming back from the government, and it didn't cost you a dang thing, except thinking outside of the box. You know, when people hear stuff about Buffett and them paying less tax than their secretary, for one, that's a lie, because it's being very misrepresentation. If, you know, he may have paid $700,000 in taxes and she paid $10,000 in taxes, but the percentage is different. That's why the percentages are different. That's why you need a business. You need a business. Because the world we live in today is not the world you grew up in. It is getting more and more unstable as far as jobs go. If you don't believe me, look at the unemployment rate, the true unemployment rate, which is really bumping about 20%. If you go back the way that we used to count it just 15 years ago. So it's getting unstable with jobs. When you have a business, at least you have some control over what you're doing. You could change. You can switch directions. You can move when you need to move instead of being just at a job where you, if the doors are open or the doors are not. Or you've got a job or you don't. And then all that money that you're producing without a business, you're giving away for nothing in return, basically. And that's just not a smart way to be. And that's not the way trappers should think. If we're smart enough to catch coyotes and otter, we should be smart enough to run our own finances where it's advantageous to us. Well, I'm going to go ahead and knock this off because it's just getting so late. And then I'm going to, because believe it or not, I got all kind of points that I was going to go through. And we didn't really get to any of them hardly. But as you can see, this is something that's I'm very passionate about, for the simple reason, because I'm hoping if there's, say, out of the 30,000 people who listen to this show, if just 1% of y'all will take this to heart and educate yourself about your own finances when it comes to your trapping, it'll change everything about the way that you live. Because it's not always going to have to be a struggle. You don't have to give away your production all the time, just like the fur. I mean, think of how bad and compounding that is. Guys give away their fur, and then they give away all their tax money because they're doing it as a hobby. Yeah, doing it like that, you ain't gonna make no money trapping. I mean, it's a good deal for a government. It's a good deal for who's ever the end user is on the fur, but it's not helping you very much. So you gotta be smart. And you know, before next week, before you listen to the new show, if you have no idea what permaculture is, get on YouTube and just look at some of the documentaries. I promise you, you'll be blown away. And don't think about it in terms of apple trees and pear trees and comfrey and blueberry bushes. Think about it in terms, how can you use those same principles? Because guys, that's the same principles that the world works off of. All permaculture does is mimic nature. If you don't think nature is powerful, don't mow your yard for 5 years. It'll turn into forest. Use those same principles if you're going to start a business, and you'll be so much better off.